Welcome to the Boston College Chief Executives Club podcast of the February 3rd forum featuring Target Chairman and CEO Brian Cornell. I'm Warren Zola. The Boston College Chief Executives Club, a program of the Carroll School of Management, is one of the top-ranked CEO speaking forums in the world. Several times each year, Boston's business leaders gather to learn from CEOs of global companies, leaders from the top echelons of their fields, who welcomed the opportunity to address an audience of their peers. Mr. Cornell spoke to members of the Boston College Chief Executives Club in a speech titled, Transforming Target. Cornell shared insights and lessons learned as Target changes its business and adapts to the shifting consumer landscape. The event was hosted by Ms. Laura Sen, non-executive chairman of BJ's Wholesale Club. Please enjoy this podcast of the Boston College Chief Executives Club.
Good afternoon. It's really a pleasure for me to introduce Brian Cornell today. Brian is a native of Queens, New York, and a graduate of UCLA. His very impressive career has spanned 35 years in consumer goods and retailing, including three roles as CEO. In the specialty store arena, Brian led Michael's stores from 2007 to 2009. He served as Sam's Club CEO from 2009 to 2012, and since August of 2014, Brian has stood at the helm of Target, which is America's sixth largest retailer headquartered in Minneapolis. There are over 1,800 U.S. stores, 347,000 employees, and $75 billion in sales. The Target brand, which we all know as Target, is the place to get on-trend fashion for your family and home at great values. I love retail, a little prejudiced, but it's a wonderful business, and I like to say it's a beautiful combination of art and science. Brian excels at both. He is known to be a data hound, digging into the analytics. So just to give you a clue of what we have as data as retailers is sales by item, by store, by day, and now even by hour. It's quite overwhelming. Brian digs into it and gets all those insights that helps him run the business so beautifully. But besides that, he really gets the softer side, the art of retail. He gets out into the stores, talks to the customers, which Target calls guests, talks to the team members, their employees, and really gets behind the numbers. What's going on? What's the vibe behind those trends? So that's kind of the official scoop, but you know, there's always a backstory. So Brian and I first got to know each other as competitors. He and I both became club CEOs in 2009, so we had a friendly but kind of arm's length relationship. But in 2012, Brian stepped up to a top role at Pepsi and became one of our very valued, very large suppliers. In this case, it was over $250 million in Frito-Lay, Gatorade, Tropicana, and of course, the iconic Pepsi products. And by the way, Father Leahy is a Pepsi fan. I fondly remember when Brian came to our strategy session, offered insights, and helped us out through a discussion we had that day, actually at Gillette Stadium. He was a great vendor partner. He actually invited me to the Super Bowl to sit in the Pepsi suite, which was way cool. And then in 2014, he became a competitor again, this time at Target, which, by the way, I'm a huge fan, love that bathing suit. Thank you. So I want to say we're kind of frenemies. When I first called him up to speak here, he really couldn't find the time. But you know, timing is everything in life, and the next try was more successful. So a little secret about Brian, he's a major Springsteen fan. So I don't know this for a fact, but I'm thinking we might see him rocking it out at the Garden tomorrow night. So without further ado, I give you Brian Cornell.
Well, Laura, thank you for that very kind introduction, my frenemy. And thank you, Father Leahy, for having us here today. It's great to be here in Boston. And I'm really honored to have an opportunity to talk to this group. But I had some very clear rules established by Warren as I prepared for today. And I was told, Brian, no charts, no slides, and no Target commercials. So I was given some very strict guidelines in preparation for today. And I thought about what we should talk about today, and really thinking about some of the challenges and opportunities that, as business leaders, we're all facing. So as I put my thoughts together for today, I couldn't think about anything more challenging and more universal than the pace of change I think we're all facing today. Pick an industry, and I've met many of you over the last hour. Whether you're in financial services, you're in manufacturing, healthcare, certainly the group right here in retail, we all know the world is changing faster and faster around us. And it seems like it changes each and every day. And I will tell you that for Target, we're in that same boat. I've spent a significant portion of my career, as Laura mentioned, 35 years. I don't know how 35 years went by so quickly, in consumer packaged goods and in retail. And without question, the kind of disruption we're seeing today, for me, is nothing short of amazing. But let me go back perhaps 4 years. And I've spent a lot of time in Boston over the years. It's actually one of my very favorite cities in the United States. And I've spent enough time here to recognize how many of you actually measure time. I'll go back to 2012. For most of you, you probably measure that as Tom Brady's fifth Super Bowl. Think about 2012. And think about companies like Uber or Snapchat or Airbnb. They were in their infancy. The idea of sharing services, crowdfunding, this whole gig economy, it was just on the tip of the radar screen. Now, fast forward to 2015, Super Bowl number 6 for Brady and the Pats. And I went back and thought about what's transpired during those two significant periods. Uber now has up to 2 million rides every day. For Snapchat, and it's probably something that many of you use, 2 billion photos per day, 2 billion. And Airbnb, a term that even a couple of years ago, many of us had probably never heard, now has more rooms than the biggest hotel chain anywhere in the world. So each of these companies have absolutely turned these industries upside down. And it's happened really quickly. At Target, and for many of my colleagues here in retail, we've seen some of those same big shifts. And we certainly saw some shifts this last holiday season. If I go back to Black Friday, for the first time ever, the industry reported more consumers shopping online than visiting physical stores. A huge shift. We saw at Target our biggest days ever in the digital channel. And in fact, we did more digital business in 7 days this year than we did in the entire fourth quarter 2 years ago. So the pace of change is only accelerating. But as I look at those factoids and we think about how today's consumer is shopping, we also recognize that during this last holiday season, on balance, more than 90% of all the sales across the entire industry in retail this season still occurred in physical stores. So rapid change is all around us, but we know how important our stores remain. And for us at Target in 2015, one of those metrics, Laura, that I look at all the time is traffic. And despite the disruption, our store traffic grew in 2015. So from that, it tells me a lot about what's happening with the consumer. It told me that our guests still love the ease and the convenience that comes in that digital channel. But they also love to touch and feel and interact with product. They love that sense of discovery that comes with shopping in a physical store. So for many of our colleagues in the room, and Chris, in your new role, you know, I'm happy to tell you that stores still matter. And for all of us in retail, in order to win, we have to do both. We have to embrace this new digital connection, but we can't lose sight of the importance of running great stores. Now, of course, that's a lot easier for me to say when I'm standing here than to do each and every day in 1,800 stores across the United States. But as a company, we've spent the last 18 months on a rather aggressive transformational journey. When we started 18 months ago, it wasn't exactly a pretty picture. When I joined the company back in August of 2014 and said goodbye to Laura during my last meeting at PepsiCo, we had been facing 8 straight quarters of negative traffic, 3 quarters of declining comp sales, and our stock at that point was trading at a 3-year low. And a lot of people were asking, including members of my team that are probably sitting at the table to my left, had Target lost its mojo? Were our best days in the rearview mirror? And if I look at the state of our business today, I can confidently say that the answer to that question was no. Over the last year, we've seen our traffic come back. We've had 4 consecutive quarters of positive comps. And despite a very turbulent marketplace, our stock is up again. And I will tell you, on behalf of our entire team, we're proud of the progress we've made in a very challenging and disruptive environment. But we also recognize, and I remind our team, I remind myself of this every day, we've got a lot of work left to do. We've got a lot of work to do if we're truly going to establish Target once again as a growth company. We really believe, and I believe, that we have one big competitive advantage, and it's 1,800 product showrooms, 1,800 fulfillment centers, where you can order online and come by and pick up on your terms, and 1,800 touch points for our guests to engage with the Target brand. The challenge, of course, is modernizing our technology, our infrastructure, our core systems to do much more than they originally were created to do back in the days when it was a very store-centric environment. We have to embrace digital. And I go back to, no matter what industry we're in, what point of disruption we're facing, we have to all be thinking about digital first. It's really the innovation that's going to drive the future. But as a retailer, we have to ensure our stores and our supply chains remain the powerful point of differentiation as we go into the future. So, you mentioned my love of Springsteen, and it might be a great analog for some of the things we're facing. And if I think about Bruce Springsteen, I'll go back 43 years ago when he released his very first album. And at that time, Laura, he was just a kid from New Jersey. And I know I'm standing here in Boston, but that first album was not a big success for him. But as time wore on, his fan base grew, including a much younger Brian Cornell, and he began to grow. You fast forward today, 17 albums later, Springsteen is still one of the biggest acts in the world, one of the greatest musicians of all time. But how did he stay on top, decade after decade? Well, he didn't change who he was. At 68, he's still that same kid from New Jersey. But early on, he realized that in order to keep making great music, he had to keep evolving with time, changing with his fans, and never being afraid to try something new. And for Target, we're facing those same kind of challenges. I know, because I talk to our guests all the time, they don't want us to change who we are. They still love the brand. They still love our brand promise. Expect more and pay less is as important today as it's ever been. But we also need to figure out how to change, to do what we do, and how we do it. And not long ago, that Target guest was someone driving a minivan. It was viewed as that suburban soccer mom who was really the bullseye at Target. Today, she's a lot more likely to be living in a city, likely to be a millennial, and much more likely to be Hispanic. And we've learned it's not just mom anymore. The whole family plays a much bigger role in shopping today. They care a lot about what they eat and where products came from, and mobile for them is absolutely a way of life. For many of our guests, our Target shoppers, they're always connected. There's always that device in their hand. They're always on. So we have to meet our guests where they are. And we need to understand where they're going. We have to change and do things differently without ever losing sight of who we are, without ever losing sight of our brand essence. And it's really started for us by stepping back and recognizing that we had to fix some of our fundamentals. So I'm a proud UCLA graduate. Father and I were talking about the importance of today. And for the athletic program at Boston College, it's National Signing Day. And next to Springsteen, I'm a huge Coach Wooden fan. And for those that have studied Coach Wooden, you probably know one of the things he was actually famous for was for spending time and making his players learn how to put on their socks. Nothing more fundamental than that. Because in basketball, the game's tough on your feet. A wrinkle in your socks, well, they cause blisters. And blisters cost players minutes. And minutes cost games. And that ultimately can result in coaches losing their jobs. For us, there's nothing more basic than being in stock with items. When we're not, it costs us a sale. It ends up costing us trips, and ultimately, it can result in costing us a customer. So we've had to step back and recognize we have to have the fundamentals in place. Our supply chain is at the heart of everything we do, and it was built for a different point in time, a time when it was all about just servicing stores. Modernizing our supply chain means we need to have new capabilities to meet the on-demand consumer we serve. We have to be able to ship from store today. We need to make sure it's really easy and convenient for you to order online and come by and pick up an order. We recognize that we have to localize our assortment. And all those things sound easy, but they create tremendous stress on our system. We've made some changes internally to really make sure that we put even greater focus on the fundamentals, bringing all of our stores our supply chain, our real estate, under a newly created chief operating officer. And his focus is very simple. He's got to fix, transform, modernize our supply chain, make sure we improve our in-stock conditions, and build the capabilities we need for the future. It's a little bit like Coach Wooden teaching his players to put on the socks. It doesn't always sound really exciting, but it's the foundation of things that we have to do. We know that for most retailers, and certainly for Target, out of stocks are their single biggest complaint. We've really made sure that one of our key roles is to make sure we stay in touch with that guest, understand their pain points, and how we alleviate them going forward. We want to make sure shopping is pain-free. We need to make sure product's available, it's easy to find, and we're spending a lot of time really understanding what else today's guest is looking for from Target. We spend a lot of time. I personally spend time almost every month in guest homes. We call them immersion trips. And we've taken our entire leadership team around the country, talking in homes to today's consumer, understanding what today's guest is looking for, really trying to make sure we're in touch with what I describe as today's modern shopper. And we've recognized that we have to up our game. We have to have new capabilities, starting with technology. We've hired a terrifically talented new executive by the name of Mike McNamara, who joined us from Tesco, where he spent 17 years leading their technology and IT teams. And he's helping us revisit technology to modernize it. And Mike's been really clear about the things that he's prioritized, making sure that our point of sale systems work, that we have the right connection with the guest, that we continue to build the right technology and capabilities to interface with this modern guest we work with every day. So we're really spending a lot of time focused on the fundamentals. And part of that also includes changing our culture. We've been focused on reducing complexity, making sure we knock down walls, eliminate silos, and go from what was a relatively rigid organization that took a lot of time to make decisions. Chris is a former Target vendor, is now nodding. And moving from an organization that had a lot of great general athletes to one where we're more agile, where we build expertise in places like data and analytics. Kim, I'll talk to you on the way out. In supply chain, in engineering, and making sure that we have a highly engaged and focused organization and team. For our company overall, as we're focusing on fixing the fundamentals, we are also thinking about the future. But part of that has also brought us back to our roots. We're really focusing on not every category, but the categories that we believe are most important to the guests, what we describe as signature categories. They're categories that have really defined Target over the years. Categories like style, our apparel business, our home business, our beauty business. Categories like baby and kids. And certainly, the growing category of wellness. And we recognize that we need to be very clear to the organization and to our vendor partners where we're going to focus our efforts. As I describe this to others, it's a little bit like playing golf. And for golfers in the room, you know, you've got a bag with 14 clubs, but they all have very different roles to play. Our signature categories have very important roles to play at Target. And those are going to lead our transformation and lead us back to being a growth company. We know to be a growth company, we absolutely have to accelerate the development of our digital tools. We recognize that mobile is the front door to our brand. And I'm proud to say that Over the last year, we've seen our online and digital sales continue to accelerate. We have a new shopping app called Cartwheel that in a very short period of time has been downloaded over 22 million times, making it much easier for our guests to connect with us online. But we also know we've got more work to do. And during this recent Cyber Monday, which many of you probably know about, we saw unprecedented demand, an unthinkable response to our program. And while we were very pleased with the growth of our sales during Cyber Monday, we also recognized that at times we were slow, a little clunky, and we disappointed our guests. So we know we've got more work to do to get it right. We also know, and we've been spending a lot of time recognizing, that today's U.S. consumer, well, they're moving back to city centers. Whether it's here in Boston or in Minneapolis or other major cities I travel to, we know that our guest, today's consumer, is moving back to urban centers. We need to make sure that our brand is there. So we're recognizing that we've got to think about our formats differently. We recognize that in a state like Boston, more than 70% of the state's population lives in metro areas. You host 250,000 college students every year, and we want to be there to meet their needs. So while last year we did a tremendous amount of business in the 128 corridor, we want to place even bigger bets. And Boston is one of the markets where we're placing a really, really big bet. Last summer, maybe a mile from here, we opened up a beautiful new store at Fenway Park. And while I've been told you should never, ever talk about your favorites, my local team knows that I view this as one of the crown jewels in our portfolio. And it's a bit of an anomaly for us. The fact of the matter is, a typical Target store doesn't fit nicely in Boston. The blocks are usually too tight, the streets are a little narrow, and it's hard to find 10 acres to develop. But in this case, we got lucky. And we're looking at other cities like Philadelphia and New York and Chicago where we can continue to develop flexible formats. And we're taking our time, but we think this is one of the ways we'll get closer to the consumer of tomorrow. We're building stores that in some cases are about 20% the size of a typical store. But instead of just trying to shrink our box, we're starting now to custom tailor our approach, making sure that we can make it really easy to meet the needs of that local consumer, but also give them the opportunity to experience more of Target online, having products shipped to their stores for easy pickup. And I'm happy to announce that while Boston may be one of our crown jewels, over the next few months, we've got new sites that we picked out in the Boston area. One by Cambridge, and another one right by Boston University in Packard Corner that'll be opening up the next couple of months. So, Father, if there's a site that you can show me by Boston College, I'm here and I'm interested. So, as I wrap up, I'll try to give you a sense for the road ahead. And we've made really good progress, but as I mentioned earlier, I know as a company, we've got a ton of work left to do. And there are a few things that I think we can all count on. We know the pace of change is only going to accelerate. And for us to transform, we need to make sure that we let our guest, that Target shopper, guide us. And if you think back to Boston for a second, the Sox have games televised throughout the years, and fans around the world are Boston Red Sox fans. Some watch every game, every pitch More and more, they might be watching from their phones. And the game looks different if you're on a 55-inch flat-screen TV, and it might be a little cheaper at times. But that Fenway store and that park, it's packed to the gills every night and every year. And decade after decade, fans love the experience to go to the game. And it's the way I feel about shopping. While there's lots of different alternatives, people are always going to love to shop. They're going to love to shop our stores. And our job is to make sure, going forward, they can shop Target anywhere, anytime, any way they want. We really think for Target, that's our path to success, to embrace the changes, the disruption all around us, to stay very true to what the guest is looking for, but to recognize that today's shopper still loves to shop. They may be shopping with a mobile phone in their hand, and we've got to make sure we make it really easy for them to shop with us anywhere, anytime, any place they want. So, Laura, with that, I think I've got a few minutes. I'd love to open it up for any questions that might be on your mind, but Father, I really appreciate having the time to spend with this group. So thank you. I can hear you from there.
Sounds good.
Maybe this will.
Whoa. Nope. All right.
Maybe we don't need this. I'm Stas. I'm from the Cambridge Innovation Center. Just had a curious question for you on drones. So obviously Amazon's made a big deal out of drone delivery, but I think the more interesting question that comes out of that is, how do you shorten a delivery timeline? And I know it's a big deal because if Target stores are a lot closer to most of us than Amazon warehouses. But it seems that in many cases, Amazon can deliver products faster than most retail locations. So I was wondering if you have a plan in thinking about getting goods to people and putting them in their hands, whether by drone, zip car, robot, Tesla, whatever it takes.
Yeah. Well, we don't have robots or drones on our radar screen right now, but we are focused on, as I mentioned, modernizing our supply chain. And a big part of that is making it easier to deliver goods to our guests in the shortest possible period of time. One of the things that we started doing a year ago was using our stores as flexible fulfillment centers. And in 2014, as we went into the holiday, we had just over 120 stores throughout the country where we would pick an order, pack it, label it, and UPS or FedEx would deliver the last mile. As we went into this last holiday season, we increased that number to over 460, where we use our stores, our greatest asset, as a flexible fulfillment site, where we can pick and pack that order and let UPS conveniently deliver it that last block or mile. So we certainly think that's a huge advantage for us. And as we modernize supply chain and technology, it's to make sure we make it as easy as possible for today's guests to shop. So we want them to come into our stores and offer them a great experience. We want to give them that option of clicking on their phone or their desktop and coming by an hour later and picking up that order. But we also want to leverage our stores to make sure that we can respond to their needs as quickly as possible. So we think about that all the time. It's a core part of the supply chain re-engineering and transformation work we're doing today. And we saw a terrific response during the holiday season.
Hi, I'm Cliff Scott, New England College of Optometry. What lessons learned would you share with us about data breach?
Yeah. Well, as you might imagine, over the last 19 months, I've answered that question hundreds of times. The only difference is now it's not the first question. It's usually second, third, or fourth. And I'll try to be as succinct as possible because the lessons are important for all of us. And while Target, because of the iconic nature of the brand, the size of our company, you know, spent a lot of time as the poster child for this topic, across the room here today, all of us share in this thread. Whether you're in banking, you're in retail, you're in restaurants, name the business. Certainly, we've seen what's happened in healthcare and in entertainment. We all have a common enemy. And if we think about our risk maps as leaders, on the very top of that has to be cybersecurity. And it's something that we have to be thinking about 24 hours a day. And we've certainly learned the importance of making sure we have the right commitment, the right technology to ensure we're constantly monitoring. We're always there looking to detect a problem. When problems occur, and they will occur, how do you contain it as quickly as possible and move to remediation? So this is a industry-wide issue. I actually consider this one of the biggest threats to commerce in America. And we've spent a lot of time as a company working with partners in DC to make sure that we can begin to work together more effectively to build the right defense mechanisms. Because the people that are challenging us today, I will tell you, are incredibly well-funded. They're extraordinarily well-educated. They are organized and looking at ways to impact all of our companies every day, and the threat's not going to go away. So as leaders of any business in any sector, we've got to make sure that we're dedicating the time and attention to managing data security. We have to have the right tools and talent in place, but we also have to have a strong partnership in Washington. And we need to figure out ways to defend ourselves against the bad guys, but we're also working to find ways to make sure they can't monetize the data as easily as they do today. And one of the great lessons for me and for probably other retailers in this room, others that have been impacted, is this is a very attractive space if you're one of those bad guys, because there's a market for that data. And it gets distributed through very sophisticated channels. People can take those cards, they're creating their own form of payment, they're selling it on the internet or at swap meets on Saturdays, and it's a very attractive business. So we've got to stop that as well. But you know, it's something that as a company, we think about all the time. We've developed a sensational team, great talent and capabilities, but it's not going away, and it's something that we all need to be working together to make sure that we share insights, we share lessons learned, and we avoid this becoming a major national issue again. Other questions?
Hi, I'm Tony Yacobian.
Hi, Tony.
With 1,800 stores and 350, almost 1,000 people under your employment, how do you think about talent development and the pressures of the escalating costs around healthcare, insurance, labor, wages, and how do you think about that as an asset for you going forward as you drive the business?
Well, I think about our team and our team members as our greatest asset. And it was a timely question because yesterday, while we were watching the snowfall in Minneapolis, and I was a little concerned that as flights were being canceled and the airport was shutting down, I wasn't going to make it here today. We had 350 of our top officers in a room talking about talent development. And we spent a full day, the first half devoted to our priorities, our key initiatives over the next couple of years. And the second half of the day was all about coaching and personal development. And when you think about a company like ours that's on a significant transformational journey, we've got to be spending the time, dedicating the resources, making the investment in our leaders who ultimately have to guide that transformation. And those 350 team members are the ones that are going to create a growth company again at Target. So it's a big priority for us. We're doubling down on talent development. We spend a tremendous amount of time recruiting at major universities like Boston College every year to continue to build that tight pipeline of talent that we need. So critically important, and we've got to continue to do that in the face of rising healthcare costs and certainly the pressures that we're feeling externally. But without investing in talent, what I talked about today were merely words on a piece of paper. And we have to have a commitment to developing top talent. And it's really part of the legacy of the great company I get to lead today. I spent a lot of time over the last 35 years both competing with Target, but also working with them as a vendor partner. And the company's had a great history of attracting and hiring talent off of college campuses, like Boston College, and providing a development program that allowed them to ascend and assume great positions. And we're committed to the legacy that was developed years and years ago, and making sure as a company, we continue to commit to developing great talent, both from the college campus level, but also recommitting to our leaders to understand how to compete and lead in a disruptive environment that we talked about today. So I think it's critically important, and it's really going to be what fuels the growth and the transformation of our company.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast of the Boston College Chief Executives Club featuring Brian Cornell, Chairman and CEO of Target Corporation. To learn more about the Boston College Chief Executives Club, a program with the Carroll School of Management at Boston College, please visit our website at www.bc.edu/CEO Club.